Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2913. That's 2913. Tonight we're going to have a really nice special guest. Her name is Geraldine Cullum. She likes to go by Jerry. And she's from Indiana. I'm not going to read her bio because she's here and she can tell her story. But we're going to find a lot of us, you know, our stories are not the same. But so often we can identify with a lot of things that, you know, our guests come on and tell us. So that's really a good thing. But before I get to that, before we get to Jerry, I'm going to call her Jerry because she prefers that. I'm going to read the mission statement, and we're going to talk a little bit about NASCA, and then I'll get our guest on. Okay. And we do have a nice little panel here building. That's great. Okay. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA. And that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public. Very important, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. It's disgusting. That's what it is. All right, number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, those three are very, very important, prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, if you go to our website, that's NASCA, N-A-A-S-C-A, .org, that's NASCA.org, and scroll down a little bit, you'll see red blocks. I call them blocks. And inside each one of those red blocks, there are different topics, okay? And as you go over to the right-hand side, I think it's next to the last block, it'll speak about keeping our children safer or whatever, whichever way Bill has it worded. And you click onto that, open it up, and you find all kinds of information, okay, ways that we, you know, as parents or as society, you know, can help keep our children safer. And for God's sake, that's what we need. And now with all the things out there that's going on in our world, I just want you to know that the stats on all the abuses, that's physical, mental, emotional, sexual, neglect, have tripled, okay, because parents don't know how to handle things, and they're worried about putting, I guess, food on the table, you bet, and the prices of everything gone up, and look at the gas. I mean, I could go on and on. I'm very political, so I'll stop right there. I watch the news all day long. So what I'm trying to get across, though, is what does it do to the family structure? What does it do to the family itself, the children? A lot of times, children become like the scapegoats, okay, for the anger of the parents. And it's all from stress, anxiety, not knowing what tomorrow is going to bring. And I don't know about you guys, but where I am, now the COVID supposedly is coming back, and the way I feel tonight, I believe it, okay? But so if I disappear, you guys can all keep going chit chat. Let's keep it that way. All right. So and I'll come back again. So anyway, we have a rough world that we're living in right now. I've been around a long time, and I've been on NASCA for 12 years, and I'm vice president of NASCA. But I have never seen the world as it is as today. Okay, this is terrible. So those people, I'm called the Night Owl, okay? We offer many things on our website, and one of them is programs. I get calls in the a.m. I am the Night Owl, and Michelle also, Michelle Bless, many times takes calls in the a.m. And what we do is, what I do anyways, I, you know, tell people, I listen to what they have to say, and then I send them over to programs. If you look at our website, you'll see all of this that I'm speaking about. Programs in itself is a category. You'd be shocked, okay? AA doesn't have a sign outside that says, oh, welcome to AA, all right? Well, these programs where people gather, they don't have a sign outside either. But many times, right around the area in which you live, there is a program where people can gather. They're survivors of sexual abuse or physical, mental, emotional, all abuses that we speak of. And they can communicate with each other. Now, that's if the pandemic allows for it, correct? Correct. All right. So, but we also offer Zoom. Zoom is right on the front page, again, of our website. We have so many things that we offer. I just want people to understand this. Okay. So now I've said my spiel, and I do want to turn this over to Jerry. She's got quite a story to tell, and I know that a lot of people are going to identify with what she's saying, because unfortunately, too often, this happens. So Jerry, why don't you start telling your story? Go ahead.
Thank you very much for that nice introduction. I appreciate your time and efforts in all this. And we do need to stop abuse. One thing I've learned throughout my recovery years here, just in the last few, is that education is our need. And I'd like to get this news out to parents of young children. As a child, I grew up not liking visits with my grandpa. My grandparents basically on my father's side, especially, though, my grandpa. You see, he didn't kiss me. As most family members would, not on the cheek or on the forehead. He'd stick his tongue in my mouth. And one trip on the way home to my hometown, Indiana, here, me and my sisters heard some very sad words about Grandpa. There was a big fuss. Grandpa had done something wrong. Words weren't being said to describe it, but we knew it was bad. I was very young. I tried to speak up. I did say, I don't like the way my grandpa kisses me. And my mom spoke sternly, saying, that's enough. That's nonsense. And I remember also, I did say, I don't like the way he puts his fingers in my baby sister's diaper either. And I remember my mom's words were, hush, you're putting your father to shame. That's enough, and that's ugly. Hush now, or we'll stop and get a switch. So I decided then, very young, that my mom was not going to listen, and she would not count my story valid. I felt rejected at that point, and those feelings followed me all throughout into my teenage and young adult life. Hence, I rejected those who loved me. I remember several years as I was young where I had refused to visit my family in Kentucky. I had stopped it. At that point, I won. I got to stay at home alone on the trips to Kentucky. I didn't have to go anymore. I was quite persistent with that. I had learned to use my mouth to reject things, and I was pretty strong about it. So I stayed home alone and rejected any contact with anyone in my family in Kentucky to stay away from the harm of one man that I was supposed to love. I remember my parents also saying I had a big imagination, and I just made up stuff. That being said, I learned that I was a liar and my words couldn't be trusted. I grew up and I forgot about it and moved on into my young adult life and into my midlife. The recovery process has taken me a lifetime of moving from one recovery group to another, and really never succeeding until I found my sister of joy, I call her, Barbara Joy Henson. Well, she's been on the show. I've been on a panelist on her show. She opened my eyes to some materials in recovery, in a recovery program that she facilitates. And I didn't remember my abuse at that time anymore. Not until I built my timeline. And that's very important to know, a timeline. This was what opened the floodgates to my recovery. The material that she gave me was Beyond the Darkness, Healing for Sexual Abuse, and also Listen to the Cry of the Child, which is a book she wrote. Of course, being a child that was very boastful and in such need, I learned how to reject things, and I rejected even the thought of sexual abuse being present in my life. But it was there. And now I help others in my surrounding community. I help loved ones, people that are in my family, with my words. I help them with their words. And in my future, I want to be able to help others, and teaching is a very important thing. Education is very important. I help them with their words and help them get their words out. They can where they can succeed to recover and learn how to use their words to help other abuse survivors. One word can strike the soul of a child and affects them for a lifetime. Our words do make a difference in those lives around us, just as my parents' words did to me. I grew up with a false hope. I always wanted a mom and a dad that would love me, and I strived to make them see that I wanted them to love me, but they were unknowing in their actions. They really didn't know what they had done. I couldn't talk about the abuse no longer because I had been threatened. I hated getting the switch. I did.
You bet. Yeah.
I did not like having marks on my legs and having people stare at my legs. That was something I could not stand. So I hushed. I kept my mouth shut for many years, up until just recently when I found my sister, Joy, Barbara Joy Henson. And I love her. She's an angel in my life. I appreciate every word she's written. And Listen to the Cry of a Child is a title that I think that's awesome. I'm going to write a book. I've got the manual or the script. Mm-hmm. I haven't put it together because I have my personal reasons for not putting it together right now. But I don't think it's ready. And I am starting to put together a website. It's not quite where I want it to be, but I'm starting to take donations to build a nonprofit group, to build a safe house where I can teach others, young adults, teens mainly, and young adults, because they get involved in building their own family, and many times they're not educated enough to know that their words can hurt their children, which is what happened to me. My parents didn't understand that this was really true. They thought it was ugly. They thought it was awful. They said it was ugly, and they couldn't understand how things could happen that way. And their precious little girl could never have been touched like that. Never. Never in their mind. My parents were from Kentucky. In most of the family came from the mountains. They were all cousins and uncles. One family was related to the other back in those days. And uneducated. uneducated in that process, and they didn't understand a lot of things. But my grandpa did know, because he did serve time. That was the subject. I found out that was the subject that my mom and dad was talking about. He did serve time for touching another person when I was very young.
Right.
And
that's not uncommon. Yeah.
And it was not mentioned.
Hold on a second. We're not, the only thing that we're missing here is like ages, okay? Like how old were you when your grandfather started to kiss you in the mouth and stuff like that?
I was extremely young. I know I wasn't in school yet. And my sister, my baby sister, was still in diapers at the time. And I remember that because on the way home, we had to stop and change diapers. I know it could have been around 4 or 5 when I recognized something was wrong, you know, that I didn't like it. And I'm just saying 4 or 5 because it was way before school happened.
Right.
And back then we didn't have kindergarten. Well, we did, but my parents didn't put me in kindergarten, so I did not go to kindergarten. My mother was a high school graduate, and my dad was not. He was an 8th grade educated one schoolhouse man. I mean, he just barely had an education. So that affected their ability to raise 3 children in this day and age. And our words are so important. To tell someone that's ugly, sometimes it can be taken internally if it's said in the wrong statement.
Right.
And, you know, I grew up thinking I was ugly. And I'm far from ugly. In fact, I was the pretty one out of the bunch. I have been claimed to be the pretty one out of the bunch. And I'm not going to deny it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a handsome woman.
Mm-hmm.
But as a child, I did not think I was. Because things that I said were ugly. And I looked just like my mother, and she thought she was ugly. would consistently say that. So it just brushed up on me. Her words mattered, and so did my dad's. My dad would claim that my mom was retarded. She was raised up on welfare, so she didn't have an education. But my mom had a 12th grade education. And my dad had an 8th grade education. So they had different family types, but they were similar in a way because they were uncles, aunts, and my mom and dad are like 3rd cousins somewhere down the line.
Right.
So, and, you know, all that in the background right there, you can kind of understand it was their lack of knowing. And I don't blame them. I do understand my grandpa now greater than what I used to because of the background of the Appalachian Mountain people. But he still knew. He still knew he was doing wrong. I don't understand how he could not know.
Of course he didn't. Let's slow down a little bit, okay? All right. Now, this is, first of all, by them saying that it was ugly and all this other stuff to even say that, I know that when children try to tell their parents, you know, what's happened to them,
mm-hmm.
and their parents, you know, don't listen, they don't believe them, or they won't look at it, whichever way you want to put it, first of all, how did that make you feel? I mean, a lot of us on NASCA went through that. I went through that, too. And but how did that make you feel? Or it wasn't important, you know, what the person was doing to you. How did that make you feel about your parents?
It made me reject them. It caused me to reject everything they said. I disbelieved anything they said, especially when it came to church. My parents were very much of a churchgoer, a Mooresville Church of God. And I misunderstood many things as a child. And they would often sing on the way home, "I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away." But, and they would think, "Oh, I can go home someday," you know. I never did like that. I'll be honest with you. I hated that song when I was a little. And I asked them to stop singing it. I was so persistent on that. And it was because they told stories of me when I was a baby. I was 18 months old. My mother had lost her father, and she was in the grieving process. But I had come up with a summer cold, and she did not tend to it very well. Upon my grandfather's death, I got so extremely sick from that cold that they rushed home to Indianapolis and put me in the hospital and left me there. The doctors told them that they didn't know I was going to make it. They didn't know if I was going to make it through the night. And they, being tired from the grieving process and the drive and all that, they went ahead and went home, and they said, "We trusted God." Okay. I was reported to have died 3 different times that night. And I had an afterlife experience or a dream. I know this because I can remember seeing my grandpa trying to feed me. And then he said, "It's not your time yet. It's not your time yet, and you're going back to Earth." At that point, I felt so rejected when they would sing, "I'll Fly Away, Oh Glory," because I was in heaven. And I felt like, you know, my life, I wasn't trusted. Anything I said was a fib or a lie or whatever they want to call it. Why was I sent back here to be so tormented, you know? So that
to be
created,
ridiculed and everything.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That created such a barrier for me and my parents to even get along. As I grew up into my young teens, like I said, I did stop it, but it's basically because I'd built the skills up to say, "No, I'm not going. I'm old enough. I can stay at home by myself," and that's what I did. And they agreed. I was 13 at that time, or 12. I think it was 12. And I didn't want to go to Kentucky no more. I didn't want to have to run. I didn't want to have to run into corners and have to keep my mouth shut, because every time I said one word about my grandpa on a sour note, I was putting my dad to shame.
And what about you? And you
right.
know, I'm going to stop you here because I'm going to go to the panel. But the switch, yeah, that triggered me. Because my mother used to make me go out and pick my switch.
Yeah.
Well, I got smart, though. Didn't help me, though, in the end. Because if it had brown in the switch, you know that when you're going to get your legs hit, okay, it wasn't going to hurt quite as bad because it was half dead or something, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then my mother caught on. And even though I was an athlete and she was chasing me all over the yard, she was an athlete too. And she just went and got new switches, and she realized what she was doing. Yeah.
I learned
so
very quickly. I learned very quickly how to avoid a switch. I just minded my mother's words and hushed. And my sisters were always envious of me when they were really small. One of my sisters said, "How come Geraldine never gets a switch?" Of course, I had not invented my nickname. But how come Geraldine never gets a switch? And this is another thing. You know, we were always taught we punish because we love. My mother stopped switching me because someone at school, or no, it was someone at church, reported that I had stripes on my leg from a switch. And they asked in the church, or somebody personally asked her not to do that anymore because it was abuse. And I didn't get any more switches. Because I told, I told on her.
Yeah.
And I was hurt at church.
Were they punching the mouth then, or what? If you
no, they just quit switching me, you know, and I felt like they quit loving me at that point. Because punishment was love.
Yeah, see, that's all messed up. I don't like that.
It sure
it
is.
Says in the Bible,
it
says in the Bible that we're supposed to guide our children, but it also says in there you're not supposed to abuse them or make them so abused that they lose, in other words, a heart. I think it's worded as heart, in other words, spirit. I'm going to go to the top of the panel here. Yes, and that's right. Let me go to Michelle from Ohio, see if she'd like to share something that she'd like to say. Go ahead, Michelle.
I do. Well, first of all, thank you for being on the show, and this is my first time hearing you speak about your story, and me, I can definitely relate to it. Carol knows what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But I have a question because as I was listening, I noticed a lot of gaps. I don't know if it's, I don't know. So I'm going to ask some questions, if you don't mind, just a couple.
Oh, go ahead. I'll fill them in. I've got more story to the story. It's just we had to keep it short for the bio.
I'm good.
Okay.
Okay, so you mentioned that your grandfather started putting his, when he kissed you, he put his tongue in your mouth, and you were uncomfortable. I can definitely relate to that. You know, my first predator was my grandfather. So that's why I was listening very closely when you were mentioning your grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you is, how long did this molestation with your grandfather last with you? Like, I forgot the age you mentioned. I knew it was young, but I missed the age. And when did it stop? And did he do more than just that? And then I have another question after you ask that, because I don't want to throw a bunch of questions without you responding.
Okay. Well, as I said earlier, this must have started. I mean, this started when I was a baby, I'm sure. But I recognized that I didn't like it when I was around four years old, because it just made me feel uncomfortable, because I noticed nobody else kissed me like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody else did what he did. And, yes, there was more to it than just a kiss. He would rub my chest. He would come in when we visited and give us a goodnight kiss, and it was always his hands on my chest, his hands on my private area. And, you know, I always hid from him. I always stayed in safe areas when we visited. He would catch me now and then. I remember one night in the loft of his barn that my uncle had built, me and my cousin had decided to sleep outside in the loft area. And this was when I really knew something was wrong. He put his hands up my skirt, and I was about 9, 10 years old. Mini skirts was a big thing then, and I was into them. And he'd put his hand up my skirt and kissed me. My cousin seen that. And when I hopped in the bed, she said, "My mommy says you shouldn't let people touch you like that, Geraldine. You just shouldn't." And I said, "But that's just Grandpa. That's the way he is." "No, that's wrong." And after that, I decided I was going to find a way not to go back down. That was when I absolutely knew it was wrong. That was the absolute point. Before that, being young, I didn't know he was molesting me or touching me in a harmful way, because my mom said that was ugly, and I wasn't to talk about it again. So when I decided I was going to stand up for myself and not go, I had stopped it. I was vicious about it. I was mean about it. And I just said, "No, Daddy, I'm old enough to stay on my own. I can do it. I know how to make a sandwich, and I ate peanut butter all weekend. They would leave me for 2.5 days. Now, my mom didn't like it, but their point was, we'll trust God in this."
Wow, interesting. What I think interesting, you know, for your mother to make a statement like that, and she knew what was going on. I'm so sorry that
she... She really didn't understand that it was the truth. She absolutely thought had a big imagination.
Okay, anyway, you know, that's typical for some mothers to do and say for victims of child abuse. I'm not with that. I mean, you know, when I was being molested and raped, you know, I used to always say as a little girl, when I become an adult, when I have children, I'm going to protect mine. I'm going to believe mine, because no one believed me. See, us as kids, we're supposed to be protected by our peers.
Exactly.
If something's going on, we're supposed to tell it, they're supposed to protect us. Not only did your mother not protect you and believe you, but your grandfather, who is supposed to be one to protect you, is the one molesting you. So, no, I'm not with that. So that's a double whammy of abuse for you. That's how I'm looking at it, because I'm listening to you. So
right.
I mean, and that's a horrible thing to go through. There ain't no excuse for that.
I can appreciate your comments. I really do.
Yeah.
But I'm not angry about this anymore. And I'll be honest with you, I used to be so vicious with my words. I mean, I was really hateful, rebellious as a teenager, especially a young teenager. Being 11 years old, I was hateful toward my parents. I had rejected any part of their life. I didn't like it. We grew up very poor. Money was always a topic. There was other things in my story, and I'll reveal that later on in life. But I'll be honest with you. I can't hate my parents for not knowing. And, yes, I did try to tell them, but as anyone can understand, when you go through a grieving process like she did, losing her dad and me almost dying, okay, and then something happened to her daughter like that, and my dad was in the car driving home. He was so upset over hearing about his dad doing something, and he couldn't talk about it because his three little girls were sitting in the car. And he was shamed. He was shamed by this. And just by my mom saying, "You're putting shame on your dad," and that shut me down, and I couldn't relate to my dad no more because of that. So our words hurt us.
Let me say this. I hear what you're saying. But I need to say this to you, that there is no excuse for the lack of them, that's your mother and father, protecting you. Because you
as
a little girl.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no excuse for that. Regardless
of your
mother.
But there was, they disbelieved. They disbelieved. They just,
they
just,
well, you know. Yeah,
let me
interject here. Let me interject a little bit.
Carol, I need to understand what you're saying.
Honey, this is her story, and she believes that her parents didn't know any better. I know.
That's what I'm trying to understand. That I want to make sure I'm hearing what she's saying. You're saying that your mother and father, well, let's talk about your mother. You said your mother went through a trauma, and she didn't understand, or she didn't, or let me ask you this. Did
she didn't want to believe it.
Okay,
there
so that
bingo.
Means, so because she didn't want to believe it, I understand what you're saying, but she still neglected you as a child.
Oh yeah, I understand that.
So, okay.
And I'll come out with my story in a full detail in a book. I'll be honest with you, that's in my materials. My parents and dad, both my parents, mother and dad, were very neglective. My dad grew very, he was an eccentric guy, okay? He lived in his own world. And my dad was very abusive to my mother in words. He would call her retarded. He would say, oh, she's just not educated. And they grew up on welfare and putting them down left and right. He was very critical. That's going to come out in my book.
But she was being abused. She was being abused emotionally by your father. She was being abused the same time as you. But
and
yeah, I get it.
In her shoes, she was just trying to protect her girls, and she was in disbelief that anything like that could ever happen, and she still is. I just recently broke the story to her, and she has apologized to me, and that was very that was breaking chains for me and my mom to actually get along now. It's wonderful. But, you know, all this time it's taken me. I'm 60 years old, okay? I'm not a young chick. I have dealt with this. Yeah. It takes time for someone to get over that. That's why I believe that teaching parents the signs and symptoms of abuse can be very important. If you'll pick up the book, and I don't make any money on this. This is just a book I strongly believe anybody should have in their library. Beyond the Darkness, Healing for Sexual Abuse. It's a blue book. It's got a blue pattern on it, okay? If you look it up on Amazon.com, you'll see a blue pattern to it. And it's just a very important information for young parents today to know. And it's also good for teenagers to know, because sometimes parents don't want to believe that this could happen to their own children. And if their own children can identify their symptoms before they get into young adult life or even older teen life, like 17 to 18, where they pick up drugs, sexual promiscuity, it's beneficial to know the symptoms. Let's just put it that way.
My last question before I forget is, have you ever been penetrated as a child besides the molestation? And when I'm asking you that, I want you to know up front that to assault and abuse is abuse to me, whether it's emotional, physical, mental, whatever. It's abuse is abuse. I'm just curious, besides the stuff that was being done to you, did he actually penetrate you?
No, well, not with his body. Fingers.
Oh, wow, that's the same. That's awful. Yeah.
And
it's the same thing.
Yeah, it can be. It is considered the same thing.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's maybe something that I have to accept on my own well-being, you know, but I have not accepted that. I'll be honest with you. I'm still working on it. It's a lifetime. It's a lifetime, and I'm trying to write a book as kosher as I can to help people understand how important their words are, and how important their understanding is when it comes to their children. It's just vital in raising children.
Well, you're doing a fine job. She's doing a fine job, Michelle. This is very hard for her because she has to look at her parents in a different light. Possibly. I'll say possibly. Some people want to believe that maybe their parents just weren't, you know, aware enough, and that's where they stay, and that's where they act, and that's how they can, you know, handle things. You and I are very blunt, okay?
I want to say that I understand all that, but in order for each other to get help or to get insight, I ask questions. And then I'm going to give what it is to give you insight, and down the line, it might help you and it might not. When I asked her that particular question, did he penetrate her? And she said, well, not physically. That let me know he either used the instrument or he used finger or whatever. But I asked that question for a reason. Here's the reason. We don't know who's listening on here. Okay?
Right.
And I need for people to understand that if, even though he ain't used his thing and put it in you, if the fact that he used his fingers, it's the same thing. I don't want anyone who's a victim to not think, oh, well, okay, well, the man didn't stick his dick in me, so I would, no. If he used an instrument, if he used his finger, he still did this, it's the same thing. Victims need to know that.
Well, yeah.
They need to know that.
And
that's
I agree
important.
With that statement. I appreciate your comment.
Yes, ma'am. That's why I said
Okay. I hear you. I hear you. I don't want her to start crying. Listen
no,
to
it's
me.
Just...
We're here for her. We all survivors.
I
and I want to say this. I want to say this to my sister, and I'm done. I want you to know, like I said, this is my first time hearing you, but I'm so glad you're here sharing your story. And you and I'm telling you, you are not alone. All what you experience and by you being here tonight, you are absolutely helping somebody.
That's
many
right.
people that is on the internet and listening without speaking, like what I'm speaking, you know, we got people that are muted. They're just here to listen. They don't want to talk. And I'm telling you, your story is helping someone. That's giving healing to somebody else. So I thank you for your courage. I thank you for sharing. I absolutely thank you for what you shared earlier about writing a book. That is amazing that you're
I have it in manuscript. And
that's wonderful.
I'll share on later shows. I don't want to take it that far tonight.
Of course not. You share how you feel, sweetie. How far
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Everybody, you know what? With the book, everybody's different. I wrote my book 314 pages in 28 days. Boom.
Yeah,
that's
my first
the way
book. I wrote my first book in
less than
a month.
I'm such a nut that way. I got it all out, man. But okay, that was very good. You've got out a lot of information, and I don't think she feels terribly uncomfortable now, because you see, I can tell in your voice, and you see, there are things that people, you know, like I hid some things from my book. I did. There's some things that
I'm very explicit in my book. I'll be honest with you.
Well, I figured
there's about
14
different chapters in my book.
Mm-hmm.
I have 14 different chapters.
And
it's going to help somebody, too. Let me tell you something. My first book, mm-hmm. the first book I wrote was in 2012. And Carol can mm-hmm. tell you, it is absolutely explicit. It's so explicit, it's not recommended for you for children to read. But,
all right.
But when I first began writing it, and I had people around me saying, why you got to be all in that deep detail? And I kept hearing the Lord telling me, I want you to speak it exactly with how you remember it.
Exactly.
And
that's
what
I've done.
And you know what? When I did that, when I first had that fear, I had so many people write me, call me, email me, and said, thank you.
Thank you. That's nice.
Yes,
makes
ma'am.
You feel better. Yes.
Yeah. Because okay. it's not about, once you become an author, hearing your story, it's not about you anymore. It's not about you. So I
it's
realized
about helping
it wasn't
others.
About me. Yeah, when I used to do my book touring stuff, I had women, and men that would sit there and grab my hand, and they got tears flowing down their eyes, and they're shaking. And I would get up and give them a hug, and they said, thank you, you became my voice. And I said, I became your family, because you're not alone. It's
yeah.
so many people besides us, y'all, that is suffering silently. And we got to be that voice.
That's right. And she's going to be. And, you know,
she
what?
Already is.
Yeah, she is. She's a part of the NASCAR family. Yes, she is. 5 years after I wrote my book, I don't know why this happened, but mine went to Japan. It actually made it to Japan. Holy Christopher.
Wow.
And I don't know why. But I'm glad it did, you know. But anyway, let me go down to thank you for that, Michelle. Let me go down to Kim. Kim, your mic is open, honey. Go ahead. And then we have Nancy. I'm going to see if she wants to
Hi.
Speak. Go ahead.
Yeah, she might want to say something too. But first of all, I just want to say I'm so sorry everything that you've gone through, and I know we haven't even heard all of it, but you know, it just breaks my heart every time I hear another one, even though I know that's why we're here. So just know that you're doing awesome, and you're going to be awesome with this whole book thing and everything. Just the way
Thank
you're
you.
Explaining stuff. You're doing a great job.
Well, the book's
so,
not the end of the story. I have a program that I'm starting to put together.
Good. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We're going to talk about
parents,
all that. Yeah, go ahead.
Uh-huh. Yeah, are both your parents still alive?
I'm sorry?
Are both of your parents still alive?
Oh, no. My father mm-hmm. passed in 2017. Upon his passing, I was able to tell him the story. And he said, it's okay. You're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And I said, Daddy, I love you. And he passed away not 2 days later. He asked for forgiveness, and I forgave him. And I felt accepted finally from my dad. My mom is still alive. She's 81 this October, 82 this October. I've talked to her about it, and she asked for forgiveness, and I forgave her. And I told her I forgave her long ago, because I really did. When I learned about my parents and what they were brought up in, the homes that they were brought up in, I also learned through my education that the unknowing is very damaging. Mm-hmm. Things that you don't know, you don't intend on doing, can hurt people. So I forgave them both, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm there, too. I mean, I know that not everybody can do that or wants to do that.
Right.
But, I forgave my father and my mom. And I also am able to go out and educate parents on how to protect their children. So there's a
wonderful
darkness to light. Have you heard that? Darkness to light towards the children?
Yeah.
So I go out and I do that. It's a 2-hour class that I'm a facilitator and a trainer.
Oh yeah.
And, so I absolutely believe
nice
that.
Nice to meet
and
you.
Carol has said, nice to meet you as well. And as Carol has said, you know, it's the parents' responsibility. It is, and we've got to
yes.
be able to get through to all the adults. And,
yes.
and I find a lot of younger parents, new parents, are interested in knowing. They want to know how to protect their kids.
But
they
don't
should.
Always want to believe the symptoms.
But they don't always. Right. Well, and I don't know. I wonder if that mostly doesn't come from the families that are going through abuse and want to close their eyes. Because my, you know, my stepdad, who's my dad, he was working for the city and county, and my mom was working for a judge, and my dad abused me. So, you know, and then my mom said it happened, but I went to tell her. And I told her specifically my dad, and she's like, it happens. So I wonder, well, I know. A lot of times it is the programming that then your parents had.
Exactly.
So, you know, what they are, yeah, what they were programmed. And
it's
then
cultural.
That to you, but exactly. And that's
it's
how,
cultural, yes.
And that's how, yeah, it goes through generational abuse as well.
It's right. It's
because you turn a blind eye.
Right. And they were taught back in the day when they lived through the Depression to not look at the bad things, to ignore them.
Yeah.
And that's the culture they were brought into. They were brought up in the poverty mindset and not educating themselves. Their education was enough for them. They'd get through life without it. That was their culture back then. And it's a complete misunderstanding because even the word states to educate yourself, you know. That always stumped me about my parents as well. I never did. I rejected the whole comment about my education's enough for me right now. I don't need school. It's like, oh, okay. And what's so funny is when I got to be a teen, I was asking my mom one day, well, what about my college? You know, we had no money for college. I didn't see any way to get to college. And she goes, I don't know. Just do the best you can. It's like, oh, my goodness, okay. And I don't think we're going to have money for your college. That's what she said. And I had hopes to go to college at that point, and I just dropped it because there was no money. I felt stuck at that point. I got stuck in life, and I went into sexual promiscuity.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's you said you wanted to stick to your bio. Yeah, so she wanted to stick to her bio. So right in front of me with the bio here, it does speak about that. And, you know, that's something that so many of us do.
Right.
And we become promiscuous, you know. In the beginning, we become, very quiet, maybe very timid and all sort of stuff. And then all of a sudden, boom, something happens. And we become just the opposite. And
right.
It doesn't make us bad kids. It makes us troubled kids. That's what we are.
Right.
We came from troubled homes. And I always want people to know that. You know, it used to make me so mad, gals. I'm going to say this. Yes, I am. The guys, you know, they would go and you know what I'm going to say. The guys would go and have sex with a girl, and what would they do? They put a notch on their belt, right?
Yeah.
But if a girl went and had sex with a guy, well, then she was a whore.
Yeah.
You know, this is how
exactly.
we were brought up. I mean, that's the way it was, okay?
We were shamed.
And, Yeah.
We were shamed and blamed.
And
it was their fault.
Well, you're not going to be the girl I'm going to take home to see mommy and daddy, okay?
Right.
You know,
right.
We had to go through all these things. And then as far as what you're saying with the cultural, it is, there is a lot of truth in what you're saying as far as the cultural and how they're brought up. My mother was from Iowa, okay? So that's farmland. You know that. And they used to say all kinds of things behind closed doors, the adults, and they'd make the children say on the other side of the door. And quite frankly, I was a snoopy kid, all right? So I would go and put my ear against the door. And so if that door opened, I'd get hit in the head, you know, because I wanted to hear what they were talking about, all right? What are they talking about? Why do we have to stay here? You know, this is the way I was, okay? And yes, things got shoved under the rug. They didn't speak about it, and they didn't apologize to their children. There was no one for me. I mean, I asked my brother, you know, I would say to him, please, you know, look what you did to me. And his only answer to me would be, you liked it. Okay?
Yeah.
And
you wanted
mother,
it, didn't you? You know you wanted it. You know you wanted it.
Yeah.
You made your bed, now lay in it.
And my mother would say, And my mother would say to me, oh, this happens in families. Well, yes, it does, but it's not supposed to.
Right.
You see? So there was a different mindset back there. It was never right.
Yes.
We were never to blame. And I don't care what we did out on the street, you know. When kids get all messed up in the head and they have mixed messages and they don't have the right proper parents to teach them right from wrong and boundaries, what's good, what's bad, what, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly, as I put it, then kids are going to behave the way that they behave. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, and they are going to get into alcohol many times. Most of us do. And or sex
it's a
addiction,
symptom.
As you have here. Yeah.
It's a symptom. Any acting up of a teenager is a symptom, a sign. You know, a promiscuity, a drug abuse. 99.99% of your addicts today walk this earth. They have sexual abuse in their background, and either they know it, or they have not discovered it. Just like I had not. I believe in the higher power. Gives us skills, and that's one of the skills, because he knows that as a young child you can't process things. He gives us the skill of forgetting. We will forget things as we grow old. Now, I don't know if too many will agree with that, but I do know there's a science behind that skill. There's a reason why that skill is there for us. We forget. We just can't process the damage that it's done, okay? And that's one of the symptoms, though, is acting out. Drugs, alcohol, boys, wanting to do the bad thing, wanting to do anything that mom didn't want us to do or dad didn't want us to do, a rebellious attitude. That's a symptom.
Yeah.
And it goes into adulthood. Well, I'm not going to raise my children that way. And believe me, I did not raise my children the way my parents raised me. Trust me on that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I
was good. I knew better.
No.
I knew better.
Yeah, but that's a symptom. That's a symptom. That's our symptoms. And once you're able to shine through that symptom and realize, you know, there was some truth the way the old ways were, but there was also lies in it. And we have overcome that now. I bake bread. My mom used to bake bread. I didn't used to like baking bread, but I do now. I like it. And I remember her cooking. She would keep, you know. So there's a lot to my story, and it will come out eventually, and I hope everybody who's listening will pay attention. I share links, supportive links. I don't get paid for my link sharing. I'm not like this person that is affiliated with anybody. I share links of important information for recovery. I have several different materials that I work with. One of them is Barbara Johansson's books that she facilitates her group from. but I have added to that library. And I will tell you, our higher power wants us to live an unlimited lifestyle. We are unlimited through our higher power. And if there's anything that anyone takes from this, I want people to know that they can rise from this. They can rise up above it. It speaks to the Bible, from the ashes, we rise. And he remolds us and makes us the person he wants us to be. And that's what recovery is all about, is rising from that. And I hope and pray that people will come around to seeing a new light, a new understanding of their life. And to remember one thing, forgiveness is a key to recovery. If you can't put that away, it just lingers on and you stay stuck. And that, there's proof in that. I can share that with you later in my manuscript. But forgiveness is a key to recovery in all aspects. One word can change a human's life. Just one word said the wrong way, it can make you feel rejected, stay alone, hide away, and never recover. And that's what I want people to try to understand, that you don't have to listen to the words that someone else says that hurt you. When they hurt you with those words, you don't have to take those words in. And that's my main point.
There are a lot of people, myself included, okay? If you say, hey, I'm sorry, because I had so many that abused me sexually, okay? And so I have my own thoughts on this. I believe they they belong in prison. So often they don't go to prison. Keep them off the streets, keep the kids safer, and all this other stuff. Because, you see, yes, we have to educate the parents. That's very, very important. And then we hope that the parents educate, the children so that they can
exactly.
be safer. And you see on our website, we even have David Pittman, I think his last name, Pittman, who gives step by step what's appropriate, what's not appropriate to say to your children, when to start speaking to them about the good,
exactly.
the bad, the ugly, as I put it. You know, all these things to make your children safer and to open up that avenue between, the parent and the child, or the parents and the child, so that if someone does approach them and treats them in an inappropriate way, they know that they can go to their parents and they will be listened to and they will be believed, okay?
Well, there's something to
that. Information. Yeah.
Yes,
we have all that information on our website.
And that's very important to have. Yes.
Yes.
I follow that website, and it's very important to have. That's why I've supported it. I share a lot. And I'll be honest with you, if a child's been injured at their soul level when they're very young, they have the inability to trust their parents.
That seems
to be a classic thing. And what we need to understand is, to educate someone in this process doesn't mean educating with just words. It means educating with action, too. And a lot of your parents don't have the action, and you have to have both. You have to have the words and the action. And this is where I'm building up the program called RISE, to help people rise up from that. It's very important to me. It's my lifetime.
Do a lot of role playing.
Because exactly.
I say that, not to interrupt you, but it's very, very important. I've given many, many presentations now. I don't know how many. Bill has about maybe five of them or something. I don't know. A couple of them on the internet, whatever. But I've done more because I did other things before Bill. And role-playing, when you do that role-playing, he has one on role-playing, I assume. But the point is, it makes it all come alive better. People can understand it better.
Exactly.
Because,
exactly.
You know, if you have... good little actresses and actors, okay? And
yes.
Like the little girls, you know, she'll say, "Don't you touch me," blah, 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 and going like this and all this other stuff. And the boy, the man who is playing the man, doesn't care, and he puts a hand over the mouth, and he assaults that child, crimes against children, because I used to work for Crimes Victims Week. I did that for a full week, and then I helped in the college to teach classes. Now, what we do, and the reason why we do this as survivors, is to show people, to help them to understand, you know, that when you have children, you make it a part of parenting. Don't just teach them about crossing the street or the guy who might, and does, don't get me wrong, jump out behind
yeah.
the bush and all this other stuff. There's a lot more to it. So if
right.
you do the role playing first, and the parents get over that embarrassment, the taboo that we speak about, because so many parents are in that stage. I
yeah.
could do a whole show on you know, how parents can teach their children what to say, what not to say, what to do, what not to do. A lot of it came from our website, and a lot of things have been taught to me, other places and other schools and so forth. And I think it's up into the family, because if the kids don't have the family behind them, if there isn't someone they can go to in the family, all right, they're going to turn to, you know, the alcohol, the drug abuse,
yes.
and all this other stuff, and you know, be out on the streets. And I even ran away from home. I know what the pavement feels like under my head. This is what happens to kids who are not
yes.
cared for in the proper way. But let me
right.
get down to Nancy, because Nancy hasn't had a chance to say boo. Go ahead.
Oh, boy.
Say boo.
Well,
nice to meet
hello,
you, Nancy.
Ladies. Boo. Hey, lady.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Good, good. You know, it was good listening to you and hearing all the wonderful things that you're doing, how you're literally turning your pain from pain to purpose. I'm just so proud of you.
Thank
and we
you.
All are. You're welcome. A lot of things that you said resonated with me tonight, and a lot of it, many of us will relate to, I guess, about the different skills and how you talked about, you know, having that skill to forget, that skill for forgetting, because I pray all the time, and when I pray, I ask God to help me forget.
Right.
You know, my abusers and the abuse. And things
exactly.
that and things that offended me, you know, not even
right.
you know, not everything is abuse. Some things is offense, you know, all those strongholds, all those negative bitterness, toxic anger, like all the things that make you just not a nice person, right? That take away from
right.
the beauty of you that you were created to be, because you were created to be loved, beautiful, peaceful, all the things you're supposed to enjoy that were taken from you and were. Turned into something bad. I'm so sorry that you even went through that. But forgetting is a skill. That's a muscle.
Yes, it is. It is a skill,
It's God-given, and the thing about it is it's dangerous, because I do pray that I forget. And a lot of times I forget little things, like I have a hard time remembering names. I have a hard time,
yeah.
you know what I mean, remembering other things that I really need to remember. And so I write everything down. I put everything in my calendar. I try to just make sure that I have alarms set through the day for meetings or anything like that. I have to do those things, because I literally prayed so much in the area of forgiveness and forgetting that I have forgotten. So I wanted you to just say something about that, and I do have two other questions for you. But what,
okay.
I mean, how did you strengthen that muscle, I mean, had that skill?
Well, and it's through reading. I have a very good resource. He created the book Unlimitless. His name is Jim Quick. He gave me reading skills so that I could actually understand what I'm reading. And then I have another resource. He created The Code of the Mind, and he's a Hindu. And I do apologize. I don't even have his name up here on my board to talk about him. But he wrote a book, and it's just a wonderful book. It's about the code of the mind. He teaches in this material to recognize the rules and the rules. What's the real rule? What's the man-made thought-up rule? And that's really a good resource. I do apologize. I don't have the direct link.
Sure.
But anyone can link up with me through Facebook, Geraldine Cullum. And, he discusses in detail the rules from the roles in this book. And it really helped me to separate what is the true rule in life and what is the false rule in life. I can give you an example of the false rule. Well, if you're a good girl, you just sit there and be quiet. The true rule is, I am a good girl. And since it will aggravate you for me to get up right now, I'm just going to sit here. I make that rule up myself. I'm just going to sit here because I don't want to aggravate you. The true rule is, it's not really going to be against any rules for me to get up. There is truth and there's a falsehood. We live by a lot of falsehoods today. When we can get through to the truth, that's when we begin building our skills to recovery. It's a long testimony. I can't get into everything tonight, but that's just part of my story. I learned how to differentiate behind the truth and the falsehoods that we live. Number one, I'll give you a big topic here. Separation of church and state. That's a falsehood. It's a falsehood. There's no law. Nobody's ever been ripped out of school and sent to prison because they talked about God in church, in school. Nobody. Okay? It's unconstitutional. It's a falsehood. Once we learn our falsehoods, we get to the truth. Everyone has a belief system, and it's okay. We all go to school together, and we all have different faith systems. We all have different belief systems, and that's okay. That's the truth. Too many times we get shamed for it, blamed for it, but that's not no one's fault but our own, because we accept shame. When we are damaged, we build shame upon shame in ourselves. And when we make the choice to not accept the shame, we start to recover. I hope that makes sense.
Okay.
I hope that makes sense.
It does. So, perfect.
But I talk about this stuff in my book.
I want to ask you one more question. You said, you know, you talked about the first experience with God was with your family, right? And your parents, right? And they had, I think, I don't know if you can say, yes, this is probably what it is. They painted that view of, like, you know, God. Like, you represent God. You know how sometimes, like, because I had somebody tell me, because I had my kids out of wedlock, somebody told me, your kids are going to hell.
Oh, yes, that's a falsehood.
Okay, right. But guess what? Because I learned about God from my grandmother, who was very loving about her teaching about God and about, you know, walking me to Christ and to what healing was with love, because she showed me in that manner, on that level, that high level of capacity. I saw her serving, leading in church, doing church at home, asleep and waking up, and church was still going up. She was a servant. And I grew up in Costa Rica, so we were, I mean, everybody has their own story.
Right.
I have my own story, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to just say this to you. Having that that experience, how's your relationship today in that area?
I have a wonderful, wonderful relationship with God. I have a website that I post prayers. These prayers are on YouTube. It's called Grace for Purpose. If you'll follow that YouTube, Grace for Purpose, those prayers changed my life. They visibly put things together very well on that. And again, I'm not an affiliate, so I'm not going to earn any money on that, okay? But that Grace for Purpose, that YouTube channel, changed my prayer life altogether. But for the longest time, I resented God. I didn't want nothing to do with church.
Right.
And there's several stories there where I was church hurt that I'll be getting into later. But, I resented going to church, and it was horrible to think of going to church, but now I go every Sunday,
and
I have no
say,
resentment toward that.
Right, and they also say it's not church hurt, it's people hurt, because
yes.
it's the people who hurt us, and now we're tainted, we're hurt, and our view of church, the place that we're supposed to go when we're broken, the hospital, right?
Right.
The place that's supposed to help us when we're broken. I've fought the spirit of suicide. I've dealt with spiritual warfare. Church saved me a few times.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Church has saved me. But I have come across one or two people who were maybe having a bad day and happened to have to deal with me on that day, and we had a bad interaction, or they just were immature and we had a bad first meeting and they were rude, and, you know, and then, so now it created this, you know, because they hurt me. But it's not
right.
church, it's people hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
The way I understand church today is the word church means group. Group of believers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yet we have groups all over this nation that are chiropractors, nurses, and they meet in groups.
Right.
Okay. They're not called churches, but aren't
right.
they? Because
they
they're
yeah.
a group of believers in one subject.
Coming together. Right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're believers in one service, and that's because they have education in chiropractic care. Where churchgoers, church believers, a church body is a believer that is educated, that it's a group of educated people in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no difference in the groups
mm-hmm.
because they are
mm-hmm.
thoroughly educated in their purpose.
Right.
So
I
changed the word meaning, I changed the word church meaning to me
right.
as a group body that is educated toward one purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I get along with that. Now,
that's your opinion.
The pedophilia.
Wait, you know, yeah, go
pedophilia,
ahead.
Pedophilia interrupted my life with my sister, my middle sister. This was one of my church hurts. The church supported this. My sister was 17. She went on one-on-one discipleship with a minister within the church who was married. The wife was supposed to meet with them, but she decided she wasn't interested. So this man and my sister did one-on-one discipleship at 17, 16, 17 to 18. She ran off with him and went to a motel with him at 18 on her graduation day. That's church hurt. I felt ashamed. I mean, yeah, I was really ashamed of that. But now he married her. They have three beautiful kids. He divorced his first wife. They did not marry until about 3 years after they lived together. That shamed my dad. I mean, that put shame on my dad, and he felt ashamed. And for years he did not go to church. But they both faithfully tied. That's one thing they tied to that church, and they kept their faith, and they're still church. He passed knowing God, and she still goes to church. But, I mean, that right there was a church hurt for me. And people do hurt other people, and they are unintentionally hurting other people, just like my parents did not intentionally hurt me. They did not. They didn't intentionally neglect me either. They were raised up by people that lived at the end of the Depression years. So poverty and having no money and having things was just something they had to settle with and deal with and be thankful for it. Now, that's a poverty mindset.
Let me say something here. about that. The Depression area, no one was at fault, okay?
Right.
I didn't live in the Depression area. I mean, I'm not from the 30s. I'm bad enough. I'm from the 40s. But anyway, the point is this. People in those days, you know, they were trying the soup kitchens. Look at the soup lines they had and things like that. That's a different story. And with my people from Iowa, they had a huge farm, okay? And they would put out vegetables and stuff, and they called them hobos in those days. Oh, my God. The hobos would walk by, and they'd go to the tables, and they had, you know, fruits and vegetables at least. I don't think they put meat out, but fruits and vegetables and water, things like that. So they could, you know, like drink water, and then take the vegetables and fruits, and they were really happy about that. So that was good that they did that. But getting back to a little bit about what you're saying here, I don't want the people, out there who are listening. Everyone handles things differently.
Exactly.
The church saved my life. Let me get it straight.
Oh, yeah.
If
Thank
it wasn't
you.
For the church, I would be dead. Okay, it's as simple as that, many times over because of situations.
Yeah.
Now, I very much believed in God. When I was 5 years old, I met Billy Graham in New York. I'm a New Yorker, and all my so-called fathers, people came from New York. They were all born and raised there, and they took me to see Billy Graham. And he said something very strange to me. He gave me a Bible, which I still have this day. I treasure that Bible.
Yes.
But he said to me, you're going to be speaking to many people. He said, but I don't understand any more than that, and told me to go off on my way. Well, you never know what God has planned for us. We all speak to many people. Look at us.
Yes.
We have many people listening right now, right? All right.
Yes.
So, but the Bible, you know, when it says go behind closed doors, because I read it from page one to the very end, and it said,
Amen.
You know, God is where you go and where you accept him. You can go behind your own bedroom doors and pray to God, which I've done many times on my knees looking out the window. I don't know why I do that, but I like to look at the sky. And I've had my own experiences with a hand on my shoulder. I won't get into that now. It's much too late. But the point is, there is no one. I was the only one in my mother's side of the family, believe it or not, who believed in God. The rest of them were atheists. Even though they put the fruits and vegetables out, they were still atheists. They didn't believe in God. And I never blamed God 1 minute for anything that happened to me in my life. You know why? Because we have freedom of choice.
Right.
Freedom of choice. We do know right from wrong. So therefore, those people out there, you know, I've given people, some people, not a lot of people, some people a chance to say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm such a jerk. I'm sorry I did this. I'm sorry I did that. They didn't choose to do that. I don't know too many people where the person says, I'm sorry, I hurt you, you know, that way, sexually, physically, whatever. But, the way that I look at it is God is great. God is good. He made us perfect. And God doesn't make junk. We turn into junk.
No, he doesn't. We're not mistakes.
We're not mistakes. And
this is what brought me out.
Yes, and you see, because of my belief, I can just push all those people up that hurt me and give them to God, because I know that they knew what they were doing, and that's how I happen to feel about it. We all have to live with what makes us comfortable and what keeps us on our healing journey and what makes us also move forward, okay? And by getting rid of the toxic people in my life and giving them to God, I was able to move forward. Okay.
That's a good thing to know. I appreciate that. And I can just tell you, once you break through that barrier of being able to decide what's false and what is true, you can choose the people more safely. And church is a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But there can be bad things in a church. There can be bad things that happen in a church. And it's devastating.
I found the only good Catholic church. I knew of one church in Red Bank, New Jersey, if you're listening out there. Yes, you were a wonderful church. Are the others like that? I have no idea. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah.
There was one.
Well, I really appreciate everybody listening tonight, and I just hope I've made sense. I get a little bit off dialogue. I got a little bit off dialogue, but one thing I wanted to make sure that I get the point across: abuse happens, and we are to recover from it. We can recover from it by going through the memories, writing down things, writing your own timeline. That helps you to recover. And one thing you got to remember is your words matter. No matter what type of word that is, as long as you're speaking your truth and being your authentic self, it will matter.
Yep.
And that's something that's very important. Our words matter. And as abuse survivors, we have to know that. As abused victims, we have to obtain that knowledge and figure it out. And until we become a recovery, in recovery, we don't overcome that. A lot of times we're too ashamed of our words. We just want to keep quiet. We don't want anybody to know. It's time to wake up and let people know. And your words matter. They really do.
I think that it's up to us, all of us right here on this panel, and all the many survivors that are out there listening right now, because a lot of survivors do listen, a lot of different groups listen. I think we're the ones that are going to put that dent, as I like to say, in the statistics. Because,
yes.
Quite frankly, you can have a lot of schooling. I have quite a bit under my belt. I know Michelle has a lot. Other people on this show have a lot of, If you don't have faith, if you don't have give God the glory, if you don't realize that it wasn't your fault, all right, and if you don't get out there and do something, now I've been sick for a while, and I'm going to have to go in for surgery, but at least I did manage to go to daycare centers and hand out information, what to look for, especially in the toddlers, okay? That's what I did for April. So, the point is we write our books, we have the show, we do have the things that we do outside of NASCAR. I also work with the homeless. I like to do that in New York, but I'm not going to New York right now. Oh, no. I'd have to wear a helmet or something. I don't know. Body armor or something. I don't know. But, we all were the ones I worked with, we were doing that for a while. It was great. But the world that we live in, okay, we have to understand that we cannot let this let us down, because one way or another, and I'm not going to get political here because Bill doesn't like that, but the point is, it's going to work out one way or another. It has to, and I believe that it will. And I think there's going to be a big change, from one to the other, or going backwards to the other administration, which was a lot better. We weren't hungry. We had jobs, and all. So I'm not going to go through it because I can't. But then all you have to do is use common sense. Look at a couple of years ago. Look at now. Okay? There you go.
Exactly.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So,
So
things will get better. And but we, as the survivors, are the ones that are going to be moving forward and continuing to move forward and opening other people's eyes and hearts. We're the ones that are going to do that. That's
and we need to use our words.
Absolutely.
That's for sure. So keep writing books, keep writing your diaries, keep writing your timelines.
And
keep
the
writing.
Artists, we have wonderful artists that draw wonderful pictures. There's so many things that our music, there's so many things that we can do, to bring forth. Let me tell you something. I wrote my book 11 years ago now. I think it was 11 years ago. I don't know, something like that. And from back then to now, I have seen so much change. We have men that are speaking out. Yeah, men are coming on the program. We have this platform. Men are coming on the program now and telling their stories. When I first was here, that didn't happen, okay?
Right.
That shows that our voices are being heard, okay?
Exactly. That's great.
Our voices are being heard. And we speak by action, okay? Not
mm-hmm.
just voice
yes.
alone, but action too, okay?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Good show. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we have about 3 more minutes. What would you like to leave people here that listen to the show? What would you like to listen? What would you like to say to them to give them hope?
Well, to be honest with you, just have faith and just believe in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just for one time in your life, stand up and believe in yourself, and stop blaming yourself. Forgive yourself from the inside out. The key, because the key is the job's been done for you. There was a sacrifice many years ago. Someone paid his life for you. So get up and stand up and use your words. Talk to people. Tell the truth. Tell your story. Get your words out and take action.
That's right.
And help others. Your words matter.
They do, absolutely. Well, okay, so this is a good show. And,
thank you.
You know, anyone out there, you know, this goes into the archives. It's not going to go away, okay? I don't know if you realize that or not. But and they never go away. You can look at, I look at things from 2012, or, you know, the shows from 2000, I think it's before that. And so once you're in the archives, which you are now, it's being recorded. You can look
wow.
at it 5 years from now. You can tell people, hey, listen to this, you know, scan number 2913. That's the night that I was on, and that was a scan number 2913. And people will be able to hear the whole show.
That's wonderful,
I think,
to know.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you offer a lot of hope, you know, to people by the way that you're speaking. And this is what we all try to do, you know, is to give people hope. Because
thank
so
you.
Often, like you said before, they are stuck. They get stuck at times in ruts, and they don't
right.
know how to get out, you know. And that's,
yep.
they can't move forward then, and that's where the depression comes in. The suicide rate is sky high right now, and it's
mental
started.
Illness.
Yes, but the suicide
mental illness.
Rate is,
yes.
is 12 years old. 12 years
yep.
old to 24 is the highest suicide rate right now. This
yes.
is horrible, okay? And
yep.
So right now we're living in a very tough, rough world, but I think if we just continue doing what we're doing and even more, like you have plans, and that's going to be great, please keep in touch with us. Let us know
sure
how
will.
You're progressing, okay? And you know the drill now, so if you want to come on Monday through Friday, any day, it doesn't matter which, come on. On Tuesdays
okay.
and Thursdays, okay, we have people that come on there. Maybe they have their PhD or maybe they have their own organization or whatever. I bring people in from organizations, too. I want to get child help back on there, too. But, you know, come back and let us know how you're doing, okay? And,
thank you.
That, you know, that gives everybody help and hope, you know.
Thank you.
So we're not just survivors that are going to sit back. Some people become too complacent, you know.
They just want to accept what it is, and it's like no. Don't
well, yeah.
accept something
I mean,
if
you
it's
know,
not
they're
quality.
Comfy, they're sitting, well, they're comfy. They're sitting in their homes, and not that I don't want people to be comfy. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But
right.
they don't help. All right, people. If you well, I went through all this, so the world owes me that. No.
Right.
We went through all this. And we have to help with that. Okay, that's
right.
what we have to do. Okay.
Right.
All right, so I got my 90-second cue here. I want to thank everyone who's been on tonight. And it was a good show. Tomorrow will be Michelle's night. She'll be on telling her story. And it'll be quite a story because I know Michelle quite well. So anyway, good night. God bless. Stay safe. And maybe you should bring a helmet out. I don't know. have a good night. Good night now.
You
everyone.
Too. Good
thank
night.
You. Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.